This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. This is Wells Tech episode 459 for Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016. This is a show about technology and ministry. My name is Martin Spriggs, and joining me each and every week to talk through the technology opportunities at our disposal in our respective ministries is Sally Draper. Hey, Sally.
Good afternoon, Martin, and happy to be joining you. Happy to have had a very busy Wells Tech week, and now we get to talk about all that's been happening.
Oh, yeah. We spend a lot of time with things Wells Tech. And that's the whole point of this month's worth of activity on Wells Tech. That's to kind of walk through the self-publishing, experience. Because neither one of us had really done it to this level before. I mean, we published an ebook last year before, I forget when it was. And that was an experience. We used kind of a little kludgy tool that did the job and got the content up there. But this takes it to a whole new level because we've got to use tools we've never used before and issues that we've never had to deal with before, like laying out a book and picking the right stock photography and making sure that that's all kosher with copyright rules and regs. And then what's this whole Kindle thing and how does that get formatted? And then where can we distribute this and what do we charge for it? And the questions went on, and that's kind of what we spent our week doing and some of our weekend trying to figure out all those things. And we were kind of inspired maybe by Rob Gunther, Pastor Rob Gunther from Kenai, Alaska, who did this process. In fact, he took it one more step, which we still have to take, and that's the audio side, with his devotional, or sermonettes, I guess they were, first-person sermonettes, went through the whole process. And I have a new appreciation and respect for what he did all by his lonesome. It's not an insignificant amount of time to do it right, is I guess my first impression.
Definitely. And I remember back at the end of May as we contemplated summer series, we've written the book, With All Your Heart, a book about project management for churches, schools, and faith-based organizations. And we've highlighted that over the past year on Wells Tech as we collaborated to make that happen in a digital format. But at the onset, one of the reasons we decided to write the book was so that we would take it all the way through to the print process. And that was a black hole for us and kind of scary territory. And as we got ready for summer, I said, you know, we said we were going to get this book printed and maybe that should be one of our goals. And we undertook it.
All along, I was kind of dreading August.
Yeah.
The other 2 months, you know, where we do some more lighter stuff, I really enjoyed those. But August was, I knew we'd have to get our hands dirty with this, and it was no light activity to get this process done. But I know we benefited, and I'm kind of proud, you know, of the effort and just kind of reading through the book again and kind of hoping that it has some stuff that is useful, you know, for somebody, mm-hmm. I think is kind of inspiring and drive, you know, drove us to the finish here. But again, going through the process, hopefully will help our listeners and viewers, because I think there are reasons why many people might want to take advantage of this. It's really a low cost or no cost way to get published, which was not possible 5-6 years ago. Now, if you write something worth sharing, it's not hard at all, especially to get it in electronic form and do an ebook fashion, get it out onto the Kindle bookstore. Zero cost, just, you know, the time that it takes to do it and some of the aggravation it takes to do it. The print, you know, there's no cost as well, except, you know, the purchase of it. People would have to make a purchase, and you can't sell a print on demand book on Amazon for free. Somebody's got to pay for the printing. So you can't just give it away. You have to pay for it. So it's not necessarily a no-cost solution. But I think there are plenty of usage or use cases for something like this. As I was working through this, I thought when I was in the ministry, I wish I would have had this because I was producing some pretty sophisticated and multi-week Bible study guides or sermon series or devotion series that would have been great to be able to distribute to people online in a Kindle format, because almost any smart device now can act as a Kindle reader. Your phone, your iPad, your Android tablet, your computer, because there's a web reader. And then obviously the Kindle devices, which are really popular. I would think you could even consider things like a catechism class that you've written. Of course, you have to be sensitive to copyright issues because you can't just publish somebody else's work. But if you're writing your own catechism class, this would be a great place to store that, make it useful, get it in the hands of your students in a real easy way, because again, you can give those Kindle editions away. So lots of usefulness here in a lot of different contexts.
Yeah, and even though you said earlier that there was new software to learn and things, it really does use some pretty basic software. We use Microsoft Word for the majority of the formatting. And then you use online, free to you, available templates and things that these different websites provide. And so I don't think there's anything that is really pushing the limits or cutting edge. We're not asking to learn InDesign or some big publishing software that would cost you a lot of money to purchase.
Yeah, I think this was probably maybe even a little bit easier than trying to figure out that ebook platform that we were working with for that first book. That was kind of a whole new thing, and how chapters worked and, you know, those kinds of things. If you can use Microsoft Word, you can write an ebook or even a book for print publishing, as we kind of proved through this process. So let me talk a little bit about what we did this past week. A week ago, we talked about kind of the creation process, where we used Microsoft Word and put this together, uploaded it, designed the cover, those kinds of things. This week on the print side was all about kind of the distribution of the book itself. And you've got, I'd say, one of the challenges was all the many different options you had that you have to kind of read up on and figure out, well, what does this mean? Good news is they're all free, so it depends on how wide a distribution you want to have. The first three are what they call standard distribution, and that's, of course, Amazon.com, and I'm talking about the print book, Amazon.com, Amazon Europe, which is apparently a different store, and then CreateSpace, the CreateSpace eStore, which is the tool, and I'm sure Amazon probably bought this company and then brought it in to the Amazon fold. The CreateSpace engine is what we built the book in, but it's also got an eStore where you can publish the book. And they all have different royalty kickbacks. The eStore is you get the most money back, and you can set your own price, but obviously you got to set the price higher than it costs to print the book. So just as an example, our book was, I think, turned out to be 170 pages or something like that, depending on what the latest format was. And to get a copy of our own book through kind of the back channel was, I think, about $11.50. I had to set a price in the Amazon bookstore no less than something higher than that, and they kind of have to work in shipping and handling, and Amazon Prime, I'm sure, figures into that and all that other stuff. So we had to kind of price the book at about no less than $19, something like that, for the print book. And I think that's mostly because we decided, well, let's go color, you know, the glossy cover, let's kind of do this right, because you can go down in quality and do black and white with a black and white cover, and the cost comes way down, you know, when you do something like that. So you do have a lot of different options. So I guess the net is that the book is now out there, and so if you actually go to Amazon.com and you search for With All Your Heart, it turns out there are a number of books with the same title about different things. Most of them are devotional, none about project management. So actually, if you search for With All Your Heart Project Management, ours comes up second, I think. So, but it looks like any other book, and it is, you know, any other book. It's got that look inside feature. It has the paperback version there and the pricing for it. And then it also has the Kindle version, and they're trying to push their Kindle Unlimited. So that's that subscription model that if you pay, I forget what it is it $9, $9.95, something like that? I forget what it is. You can read any book in the Kindle library. You have to actually tell the publisher or tell Amazon that you want your book to be available in that ecosystem, and I said, why not? So right now the book is there. You can buy it. You can download the Kindle version, and it's also, as I mentioned, in that e-store, that Create Space e-store, which is more of a stripped-down version of the Amazon store, but you can go set a link directly to that and grab the book.
Wow, I'll have to go over there and like it. Looks like we can be Facebook connected as well.
Your review, you know, all that good stuff.
So I'm going to be honest. I didn't see this link that you're sharing right now from Amazon till about 5 minutes before the show started. And with all my heart, my little heart leaped to see that our book actually made it out there. And I think that you probably finalized all this maybe Saturday, Sunday, and it's out there and searchable and everything right away.
Yeah, the print book takes a little bit longer to kind of go through the channels. They have to vet it to make sure that it's not print worthy, but that it's going to actually print a book when they hit the button. I don't think they read it. They do obviously make you sign disclaimers about this kind of content or that kind of content, and make sure you own the rights to it, and do you own the rights worldwide or just domestic, those kinds of questions. So there is a little bit of a vetting process. A much less of an obstacle on the Kindle side. You can basically upload and edit, all you want, and it takes couple hours to go through that process of submitting it and then it finally getting into the Kindle store, which you actually need, which I'll talk about in a minute, because the whole Kindle publishing experience is really challenging to get something that looks nice. And maybe, I don't know, Sally, how many ebooks you've read, but there's lots of different levels of quality in ebooks, and whatever tool I'm using is probably maybe not the best tool to kind of get that publishing formatting exactly the way you want it, because using Word and uploading it, all kinds of kind of formatting challenges with images and justification and word wrapping and that kind of stuff. So you will go through a number of different cycles to upload the version that actually people would want to open up on a Kindle and read.
So that leads me to the question. You've used these two different tools to upload a book for print, a book for Kindle. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that you can go and write over those, yep, and that it pretty much flows through and is instantly available.
On the Kindle side, on the book side, it's a longer process.
Still a longer.
Days probably. Yeah.
Okay.
So that one is a little bit more what you see is what you get, and you worked, some long hours to get that into that format that we wanted, where you basically get the Word doc and then you publish to a PDF, so it's going to look like this. And pretty much what you upload is what you're going to get. So there's not a lot of formatting surprises, not as much on the Kindle side. Now, I should say you can upload a PDF to the Kindle site, but they recommend against that, because part of the benefit of using an e-reader is, of course, expanding the text size and changing the font and, all the stuff that you can do on an e-reader to make it more of a personalized experience. But in order to do that, you have to be as flexible as possible on the input side so that you're not, hard coding anything, so that the images float around as they should and the reading experience is as good as it can get. Before we leave this topic, I should say that there is a standard distribution. I'm talking about the print book, but there are also other distribution channels, and those are to bookstores. So you can actually send this to bookstores or other online retailers, so it doesn't have to just be Amazon. You can also send it to libraries and other academic institutions. But those are obviously going to cost you something because you got to pay to get those printed and shipped out there. And so that's more of an inventory model, but those are at your disposal if you're publishing something that is worthy of, you know, being on those bookstore shelves or in that on those library shelves.
Interesting. Maybe we should go for the academic institutions. What do you think?
Yeah.
No.
I put together a quick lessons learned, then we should go to the next topic here. Throughout the process, I've tried to log, you know, what the experience was like. And so these are my lessons learned, at least, and you probably have some of your own too, Sally, from what you did as part of the publishing process. But if you're going through Amazon, and that's the one we pick because that's probably the most well-known and most popular and widest distribution, I have to say it's kind of a maze of websites and tools that seem kind of cobbled together. It's not a seamless experience, although I think they put a nice layer on top that walks you through step by step. You're almost jarred into one kind of approach to another until you're finally done with the process. So I think that's probably because they bought these different toolings and different products and put them together, and it's just not as cohesive as maybe a true beginner. If somebody was kind of afraid of technology and they just kind of wrote the next greatest American novel and were hoping to self-publish, I think somebody less technically astute might be challenged by the process. Now, we know Rob Gunther went through it, but I'd call him fairly tech savvy. But if somebody who maybe can operate Microsoft Word, but you know, not much else, and maybe that's a challenge, I think this would be a challenge to them. Second lesson learned is I spent more time in Word than I ever have, probably over the past 3 or 4 days, and kind of pleasantly surprised. Word is really powerful. I was a big WordPerfect guy long ago, and I like the hands-on approach that it took where you get down in the code and see what's going on, and oh, this is bold because it's got tags around it here and whatever. Word kind of hides all that stuff from you, and I really kind of was, you know, kind of standoffish against what Word had done, but I think it's come a long way, and it's a much more user-friendly experience. It's still way more power than most any user would ever need, and it takes some time to learn. But I think once you kind of get some of the key concepts, especially this concept of styles and how pages get formatted and headers and footers, you're in a pretty good place. You can do some very powerful things with how images are handled now. I'd say it's, you know, probably a couple years ago or maybe even last month, I would have told the congregation, if you want to put together a newsletter, don't even think about Word. I mean, go to like Publisher, InDesign, you know, a true page layout program. LucidPress is one we've talked about as well. But I would say, based on what I saw, if you're good with Word and comfortable with Word and you want to stay using that tool, I'd say Microsoft Word could do a lot of what you need as far as a page layout program. So it's really impressive to me. And in fact, in this workflow, producing a book this way, it almost demands that you use Word, especially if you go into the Kindle world where you've got to have styles and text to reflow around images, those kinds of things.
So the moral of the story is, if you want to use Word, force yourself to do it on a huge project.
With a deadline.
Yeah, right. With a deadline. And then you have to invest the time to figure out those helpful things that it can do for you.
Yeah, and that was another one of my lessons learned is don't be afraid to try, you know, and lay out your own book, but allow enough time. If you're going to have to really get heads down on it for quite a while to get comfortable with it. Another lesson learned, I talked about this, use styles. I've always known about styles and used them intermittently, but this is a really demanding process, and if you don't use styles, especially for a longer book, I don't know if ours would be called a longer book, but it's long enough that if you don't use styles and you got to make a change to every type of headline, that's a bummer. So use styles, get comfortable with them. That's probably one of the first features I'd encourage people to learn, especially if you're using it for desktop publishing things. Another lesson learned is look for examples. I know when you laid out the book initially, I mean, you were looking at different books that we'd actually even reviewed over time, similar books, and you'd be surprised at all the things that you kind of need to know and decisions you need to make before you get into this publishing business. Like, what side of, is it the left page or the right page start a chapter? You know, things like that. Does the page numbering, should it go on the left or the right or the center? And what goes at the top header? And do you do full justification or left justification? And, you know, all those kinds of things. So it's really hard to kind of do those, make those decisions in a vacuum, but to look at examples, like examples you like, is probably a good strategy.
Definitely. And it was funny because I did look at a lot of different books, and they made decisions differently. And so that gave us options and more things right to kind of weigh out as we were making our own decisions.
We had little conversations about very small things, like should we center the page number, should it go on the left or the right?
Right. And
those decisions you have to make. Another lesson learned is don't think that the print version and the Kindle version will be able to use the same design. So if you think you're going to print it and also make it available in electronic version, yeah, there's certain things you can reuse, but at the end of the day, they're totally different animals. As I mentioned, I had some issues with images. The Kindle rendering engine kind of has a mind of its own. So even though I left justified everything, it wanted to full justify everything except for the bullets, you know. And then it was, well, should I do those as well? And image handling was kind of hit and miss. It would resize it, and, you know, if you had images kind of right justified and text wrapping around the left, it wouldn't always honor that. Same with titles and keeping titles stuck to the paragraph below it, headers stuck to the paragraph below it in Kindle version, no matter what I did. You know how you've got that keep with next function, you know, in the paragraph mm-hmm. setting. Doesn't honor that either. So you'll have a little paragraph heading or section heading at the bottom of a page on the Kindle, and you hit the next button and you get the paragraph. So I don't know what's up with that. So just expect some of those frustrations and do the best you can. Last two lessons learned, I guess I have on my list, is there's really no reason not to do both, kind of the print version and the electronic version. They don't cost anything except time, and there are people who are going to want, if your book's worth reading or using, there are people going to want the print version, and there are going to people going to want the electronic version. And you know, they do have cost differences as well. One last thing I found out just today is you can't get a free copy of your own Kindle book. There's no way to go into the Kindle store and say, hey, that's my book, load that on my Kindle. So you've got to download a Mobi version and then email it to your device and then open it up in the Kindle app to actually see how it's going to look, because the little online reviewer tool that they use doesn't bear any resemblance to what it's going to look like on your actual Kindle device. So that was part of the frustration, getting the Kindle version up and running. So those are my lessons learned, Sally. Did you have any more to add to that?
I guess just listening to you and knowing what I went through, probably the choice to include a lot of images or images really at all is probably one of the big differentiators. Yep. So if you're doing a sermon series and it's all text, you might have a lot easier experience than we did, and lower cost, because you could do it black and white and all those kind of things. So
now, there is a Kindle book builder that I didn't research. It was something you download and use and kind of a tool. So I can't comment on how that would ease the process. I may try that later on. I just didn't have time to do it, especially as I was kind of fighting with Word and getting the styles the way I wanted in hopes that it would take. So that may be something we'll do down the road. But they do have some other options, so I shouldn't be too harsh on them. But that's not the first option that they tell you. They say, you know, use Word and upload it and then go for it from there. So I don't know.
Well, I'm glad we had the experience. I'm sorry that it turned into such an issue with the Kindle. That's unfortunate. Yeah, but whatever. Now we're on the other side of the mountain, and we can look back and smile, and that's a good thing.
Right. So if you're interested, and we'll put links in the show notes, if you're interested in the book, now our listeners know that it's available out there on Sway, which is a little different experience because we've got multimedia and whatever. But if you want it in e-reader format, which we priced at $9.95, or in a published book, $19.95, those are available on the Amazon store. So, and we'll have links to those.
Awesome.
I think we can move on to the next segment of the show, which each and every week is our picks of the week.
And I'm ready to talk about my pick of the week. It's something that I've known about and probably talked about on the show in the past, but it probably was quite a while ago. It's a free resource actually available out on the web. It's called CS Unplugged, Computer Science Without a Computer. And basically it's a big large document you can download in PDF, and it's full of different activities for all different ages to use in the classroom setting. You might even use it with just community ed kind of settings. It doesn't have to be with young students. But it teaches computational thinking, and it has topics, things like learning about binary numbers, error detection, searching and sorting, and how those kind of functions happen on a computer. Programming languages, information hiding, cryptographic protocols, all kinds of interesting topics, and all done in this PDF format. So the book is organized into different sections. They have a section on data representing information, algorithms, procedures, interactability, cryptology, and all kinds of different things. And then when you go into each section, you get these PDF documents. They also have extensive videos that show the lessons being used and give you more of an idea of them. But for instance, if you were interested in binary numbers, they walk you through how to introduce that to your students and use cards with dots on it to represent binary numbers, and they demonstrate it there, and then they give you like worksheets that are reproducible, so each student could have their own set of binary number cards and do the exercises and things. So good hands-on type lessons, and all completely unplugged, no computer required to do these. Here's an example called Color by Numbers, which is about image representation, where they're kind of breaking down an image into different pixels and showing how that could be represented with numbers of either on or off kind of things. And here's one more example from the lengthy list. This one's using Battleship, and the concept of Battleship to introduce searching. And they have several different examples. They have linear searching, they have binary searching, and they have hashing as an example. And then they give you these battleships to use with different numbers and things on them, and you can play the different games. So very well laid out, easy for any teacher, whether you know computer science or computational thinking or not, to walk through the lesson plans that they've provided, and a really neat way to get your class thinking computationally, the way computers do, and understanding more about how they're functioning on their behalf. So I highly recommend Computer Science Unplugged. It's at csunplugged.org. And we'll throw that link.
So what grade level would you think these might be suited for?
They do put ages on the different activities, and some start as young as 7 years old. So reading skills aren't required to understand binary numbers. It's dots on a, you know, a card or whatever. So they do help you with that. I know I remember one exercise where it was like the side of a skyscraper, and they were spelling out words with the lights on and off in the different offices and stuff. They make it a lot of fun. The kids, you know, enjoy it and learn along the way.
Cool. Nice. Good find. Mm-hmm. My pick of the week is a follow-up on our conversation about publishing, and that is some training resources on Microsoft Word, especially Microsoft Word 2016, which I think has some really good features that were helpful in the publishing process. And I've referred to lynda.com, both of us have referred to lynda.com for a long time. They were recently published by LinkedIn, the social network, although nothing much has changed, thankfully, at lynda.com. They still have some great resources. The site offers a 10-day free trial, and I often encourage when I teach my MLC class presentations, dynamic presentations, I say one great resource for you is lynda.com. Even if you just sign up for the 10-day free trial, you can include a couple weekends in there and get a lot of videos, screencasts done on a particular topic. And even if you need to just pay for a month, you can buy a month just for $35. And that's pretty cheap training for all the stuff that they offer, especially if you're trying to zero in on a particular software product. So if you're trying to learn Word and don't quite get the new version or never really got Word at all, lynda.com has some awesome videos. So they've got Beginner or the Basics. That's an hour and 15-minute course. They have essential training, and they normally have like an essential training bundle for almost every software package, and that's almost 6 hours of training. And with that, you get resources, template files, you know, those kinds of things. They have advanced tips and tricks. So almost every major product. And this could be for Excel or PowerPoint or Outlook or whatever. So lynda.com is a great deal. Also, if you are looking into getting the Office Suite, or I know a lot of churches and schools have purchased this in the past through different licensing packages, and now that Microsoft is going to a subscription, we've mentioned this in the past as well, Office 365 is a subscription package that not only gives you kind of the whole suite, online and downloadable, but you get some, you get a SharePoint install and some other tooling that goes with that. And we just went through this at our school, Office 365 for nonprofits or education, basically $2 a month per person. So if you do the math on that, it's actually pretty good. And you can install that, I believe, on up to 5 computers with that same account. So if a teacher or a pastor gets a subscription, they can install that on their home computer, et cetera, without any additional charge. So when you add that up, it gets to be a pretty good deal. And I'm pretty impressed with the current Office Suite, now with the Mac versions that are out there as well, and the mobile versions. There's a pretty compelling case to revisit these rather than, you know, I think a lot of people skipped over to Google Docs and, you know, kind of that whole online environment, but there's certainly some power to the desktop version, and I certainly took advantage of it in this publishing process. So Microsoft Word training on lynda.com is, and we'll have a link to that search in the show notes. 10-day free trial or $35 a month if you want to just do it that way. And then Office 365 for nonprofits, $2 a month if you're thinking about doing that for your church or school. Those are my picks of the week.
Kind of late for an end of summer plug, but we did this at the beginning of the summer one year. We purchased it for our family, lynda.com, a license.
Oh, so that
our boys,
right. Yeah.
Yeah, could study during the summer on different things they were interested in. So, and they made it worth the cost of it. They spent some time on Lynda and learned, I think they were really into programming at the time, so they were learning all kinds of cool stuff.
Tons of stuff. And it's not just technology stuff. There's public speaking, and there's, you know, there's photography. There's all kinds of good stuff. I think there's over 3,000 courses at this point. So just,
wow.
And these are, if you haven't seen these aren't kind of YouTube hacks where somebody's, you know, on a card table and a bad microphone and bad light. I mean, these are professionally done with people who know their stuff. So they do a nice job of putting that together. Sal, we have any community feedback this week?
We do. I thought I'd lead off with a little tie-in to my pick of the week, and that I probably should have gone last, and then it would have tied right in. But anyway, I heard from our friend, longtime Wells Tech listener, Ryan Rosenthal, who's a teacher at Faith in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin. And Ryan wrote to say that he was considering adding coding, some basic coding, to his curriculum this year with his 5th through 8th graders, and was looking for a good place to get started, and also any kind of support that he could share with parents for why coding is a good skill to learn and things like that. So talking programming in the education setting. And he specifically asked about Scratch. Scratch is something I've talked about on the show in the past, and it's a programming language that came out of Massachusetts Institute for Technology. It's a drag-and-drop kind of graphical interface to doing programming, and I was able to point him to a couple of help places for educators. So there's a scratch.mit.edu/educators. There's also Scratch Ed from Harvard, and it's called Creative Computing, where you can get guides to getting started using Scratch, all kinds of great downloads on that as well. So Scratch is certainly a really good place to start getting the kids thinking computationally, getting them doing loops and if-then statements and working with variables and all those kind of things. You can do that in the Scratch environment. In addition, certainly very popular in the last several years is code.org, and they have extensive options for all different grade levels if teachers want to introduce coding in their classroom. So at the middle school level, lots of different ideas and projects and things, as well as links to other sites where you can do coding, all kinds of resources here. So definitely check out the code.org site. On the side of justification or explaining doing coding in your classroom, Scratch has some resources, really interesting TED Talk on their page for parents, where one of the creators of Scratch actually talks about how it took off and how students just almost organically knew how to begin to interact with the interface and things like that, and the things they did with it. Very inspiring to watch that TED Talk. I'd highly recommend that. Other articles I found, this one's entitled Why Kids Should Learn to Code and How to Get Them Started, and then one from Edutopia magazine, Add Coding to Your Elementary Curriculum Right Now. And so some of those may give you some support and ideas and things for working with parents and helping them understand the direction with an addition to your coding curriculum. So we'll be anxious to hear from Ryan and hear how it goes as he's introducing coding in his upper elementary classrooms there at Faith.
Neat. Thanks, Ryan, for the question. Yeah. Great. I think there's others who are probably asking that same question who don't know where to start, but fortunately there are some great resources out there.
Definitely. A couple of comments from our Facebook page. First up, we heard from Perry Lund, and this is actually in response to our show 2 weeks ago, Martin, where we talked about Microsoft Sway as a really great online publishing platform. And
I don't know if I'd say really great, but it's pretty good.
Yeah, okay, as a pretty good online publishing platform. He says, nice work. I encourage our teachers to use Sway for classroom projects. I've had biology and civics classes use this tool to build group presentations. I think our Evergreen Journalism class will make digital newspapers as well, save the school paper and copier costs. So there's another use for Microsoft Sway. Do it all online.
I shouldn't be that hard on it. I think it's got, like we mentioned when we talked about it on the show, like two, three weeks ago, it has a niche. And if you're in that niche, it is a good tool, very good tool. So
definitely. And then I think on that same show, perhaps, it might have been last week, but I think it was 2 weeks ago, I went way out on a limb and made my pick of the week, Pokemon Go, just because it was such the digital rage of the summer. And we heard from our friend Leslie Bergman. I got to give kudos to the folks at Good Shepherd's Lutheran Church in West Allis. I think we described the fact that there are these Pokestops where people can go and get more Pokeballs and things like that, and that's kind of randomly assigned to places along the way. And it turns out that their church is a Pokestop, so they were able to offer lures, and they actually put out a sign, free lures, free food, come join us. They apparently were having a block party, and they made Pokemon Go part of it. She said her church had already been designated as a Pokestop and they have no control over their designation as a Pokestop, you can purchase lures to give away. So I had to go read up on lures, and basically it's something that potentially attracts the Pokemon to show up at your Pokestop more frequently. So you get some kind of magical dust on your screen if there's a lure set out. So, oh, the joy of Pokemon Go. Did you get it installed, Martin? Have you found
no,
a lot of Pokemon?
I
have
not no. Done that.
No. Yeah, I'm still at two, the two that I got when I added it to my phone however many weeks ago. But
so
anyway.
Did this happen at Good Shepherd's or is this upcoming? I'd like to know how it turned out.
It did happen. She says, I can't definitively say the lures actually brought us extra people, but there appeared to be some action.
At least they appeared to be hip and so, with it. If
of course, yeah.
Nice.
So thanks, that's what I've got for community feedback.
Very nice. So, Sally, I think we have, what, 1 week left in our summer series and 1 week left in this month's focus on desktop publishing. And we're going to make an attempt to take this the last leg. So we talked about digital publishing in Sway. We talked about print publishing in Amazon and then ebook publishing in Kindle. Now about audiobook publishing, which we know nothing about, and we're going to try and figure that out over the next 7 days between now and our next show. So you'll know whether or not we actually were successful or where we are in the process when next show hits about how to create an audiobook. So,
with great confidence, we say we will try.
Yes.
We'll see.
We'll effort it, yes. Mm-hmm. All right, so tune in next week. If you have comments that you'd like to share with us, encouragement, suggestions for future shows, people that maybe you'd like to see us interview because we're getting back into our interview season. We're going to be starting up with our new educational technology podcasts, or not new, but continue with those because we take the summer off from those. If you got suggestions for that, just go to our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. All kinds of ways to give us feedback there, links to the social networks we're involved with. You can send us an email, wellstech@wells.net. Just lots of different ways to hook up with us. We'd love to get your feedback. So I think that's going to do it for this show, and I'm glad that all of you tuned in once again. Please share the fact that this show exists. I'm kind of amazed after how many years that there's still many people who don't know that we're on and could benefit from it. So if you want to share it with your faculty, your fellow call workers, your fellow leadership, please do that. We'd like to get as many in the Wells Tech family as possible. So thanks for doing that. And we will see you next week. Bye-bye.